Welcome to the Ace Files, exploring asexuality, the asexual spectrum, and ace issues. We are some members from Ace Toronto, a local community group of people on the asexual and or aromantic spectrum.
Hi, my name is Sam. I use she, her pronouns.
And I'm Brianna. I also use she, her pronouns. Today we're going to be talking about asexuality in the media.
So I know a lot of ace people in real life because I have gone to ace groups and met them. But I only know a few characters in fiction who are ace because even though I go and seek them out like I did in real life, there just aren't very many of them. So like there are a lot of maybe gay and trans characters. Sure, that's awesome.
I don't think there's that many trans characters.
Okay, no, that's true. There aren't that many. We're getting more, which is great. But we don't have a lot of ace representation. So why is it important to have ace representation? Let's talk about that, Brianna.
I think representation is really important just to feel valid and feel like you're a legitimate person and the way you are is like an acceptable way to be and that you're not alone. And there's other people like you. And I think especially when you're growing up and you're trying to find people to identify with in the media you're consuming, it's really difficult when you don't relate to them as much and when you can't see yourself in any of the characters. And I know I didn't run into any explicitly asexual characters when I was growing up, obviously, because it's a fairly newer term and it's not very common. But I know there were some characters who I felt really drawn to and before I came out as ace. And now looking back, I'm a little bit like, oh. And it turns out that a lot of these characters are also characters that other asexual people were pretty into as well. So one of the most obvious ones is Sherlock Holmes, the character from the books as well as several million TV shows and movies and so on, because he never forms any kind of romantic or sexual relationship, as far as we know, in the canon of the books. And his most important relationship is with his best friend, John Watson, which is very different for any kind of media. And it was just like a really cool thing to have as a character. Did not have a romantic subplot as a story.
Yeah, he has that pseudo-romantic subplot with Irene Adler in a bunch of the iterations, but in general, he really does not show interest in romantic or sexual activities. In the elementary version, played by Johnny Lee Miller, Sherlock at first says that he sees he has no interest in sex and sexual actions except as just kind of a necessary function of the body, which, you know, is, I guess, a pretty ace way to look at things. Like, you can still be aroused, for example, and still have sexual actions, but you can take care of them yourself. You don't even need another person. And even if you do have another person, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are sexually attracted to them. You just needed that sexual fulfillment. Anyway, that's how I think it should go. And I think that's why Sherlock is pretty ace.
In the BBC Sherlock, I think he's still portrayed as pretty asexual, because especially his response, like when John asked him about relationships and he asked him if he had a girlfriend and he's like, not really my area. And then John's like, boyfriend? And he's like, no. Which is such an ace thing. Like, I love that. And his relationship with Irene Adler is also something which they sort of, like, play off the possibility of it being sexual and romantic. But a lot of it is, like, I think his attraction to her intelligence and the fact that she's like a match for him, and he's like attracted to her as an adversary and an equal, and it's not like necessarily something that's romantic or sexual. that's my interpretation of it.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. The intellectual attraction, because of course there are lots of different types of attraction, and sexual and intellectual are two different types. And the thing is, the media does play up the romance part of it, because romance is what sells, I guess. But that's, we'll cover that in the amount of normativity episode. That's a whole other rant. Can we talk about another character? The Doctor from the BBC long-running series Doctor Who is another character that is often headcanoned as Ace. He is an alien with two hearts, but he looks human, and for the most part, he does not have any interest in romantic or sexual relationships. There was a plot in some of the newer seasons where he possibly not, I'm actually not fully caught up, has a wife. And actually, I'm not sure what the motivation was. I think he might have done it to save her life. It's been a while. Yeah, they're both time travelers anyway, so that makes it complicated. But he often rejects any advances that he gets. And I think there was one, like, in the third season, the Shakespeare episode I just saw on TV the other day, and there is a witch or something who goes up and tries to seduce him or whatever, and he's like, oh, that's not a trick, that's going to work on me. So that's a pretty Ace thing. It could just be that he's determined not to be distracted from his main goal by the villain, but also he can be Ace. We can decide he's Ace.
Yeah, I love the Doctor and his relationships with a lot of the characters. And especially in Classic Who, he does have children, but another thing is we don't really know anything about Time Lord biology. You can be asexual and have children as well. But they could just be like I think Tolkien's elves are like kind of asexual. Like, they don't procreate by like the way humans do. They like grow like tree, like plants or something like that, I think. So, and you can have children and be asexual too, obviously. And especially like in Classic Who, like, there's like never any romantic subplots at all with any of his companions, who are all like pretty women. And in the new Who, I think his relationship with Rose, I think, could especially be read as romantic, but there's never anything sexual like on screen or in the canon. And I think just like the way he acts around humans is very sort of ace-like, in my opinion. And also the Doctor, like, it's like every time he regenerates, it's a different personality. So like not all the Doctors have to have the same sexuality. I think later in the show, like, I was getting annoyed with it, because I think Matt Smith was getting, like, the way Moffat was writing him and some of the Doctors, he was getting like a little bit more sexual, I guess, with his companions. Like, he was commenting on like Clara's short skirts and stuff, which I was a little bit annoyed by, because I don't think it's very unnecessary, and it makes like just like him picking up people to travel with like a little bit more creepy. Just like, and I think Stephen Moffat like has explicitly said that he considers asexuality a bit boring. Like, he doesn't want it to like headcanon his own characters as Ace.
Really? I didn't know that. That's so annoying.
I think, like, we can Google the quote. Moffat, I think, was asked about Sherlock being asexual because he is very subtextually asexual, at least to me, in the BBC version. And he said that when he was asked about it, he said that it's the choice of a monk, not the choice of asexual. If he was asexual, there would be no tension in that, no fun in that. It's someone who abstains, which is interesting. There's no guarantee that it'll stay that way in the end. Maybe he marries Mrs. Hudson. I don't know. And I found that quote so irritating, and like just such a limited view of the fact that he doesn't think there can be any sort of tension in relationships or like any kind of interesting dynamic without it being like a sexual one. And I think, like, why is it so much more interesting to have like the just like intellectually superior professor type like abstaining from earthly desires, when you can have like a canon asexual character, which is hardly ever, like, never done, especially like in popular media. Like, I just like the fact that he's just like a genuinely different person, and the fact that he's like slightly socially, like he doesn't have like the same sort of social conditioning as other people do, and he's like maybe coded as a bit neurodivergent, and like just the fact that you're not making any of this canon and you're just like, oh no, he's just the same as everyone else, he's just choosing to be like that, is just like a very boring interpretation of a character to me too. I don't know.
Like, I forget to do my laundry sometimes, and then I run out of shirts and I have to get creative with my wardrobe choices. There's tension. See, you can be tension, have tension in an asexual person's life and also in relationships. But I mean, I would like to see a character just struggle with having nothing to wear because they didn't do laundry for 3 weeks. How can we get that kind of representation also? That would be cool. Not the same kind of representation, but you know, something else.
I really liked the doctor, the ninth doctor and Rose's relationship, and I personally sort of interpreted it as sort of a queer platonic relationship before I knew what that was, because it's especially in the beginning, it's sort of very, they have a very, very strong connection, and it's somewhere in between sort of friendship and romance in a way, because they never kiss until the very end. And the fact that their relationship, which is obviously very intense, but without them, like the fact that they had such a strong relationship and they really respected each other and they were very meaningful without it being explicitly romantic until the 10th doctor was, they did kiss at the 9th doctor, but besides the kiss, was just like really cool. That relationship was something I was like, oh, that's a really cool relationship that was meaningful to me before I knew it. Why? But a lot of people have personal interpretations of like what they view as queer platonic. Like, I think a lot of people said Mulder and Scully from X-Files, like they really liked their relationship before, especially like sort of middle, early on.
In the new Star Wars movie, I think you should say this one though.
No, this is totally not supported by any canon whatsoever. I just think it would be amazing if Rey were asexually romantic, because how cool would it be to have a female lead with no romantic subplot, and then also the other two characters get together, which would just be like, just a ace girl and a gay couple as the main characters of a show. That would be awesome. So that would be that's my opinion of what should happen in Star Wars. Writers, take note. Okay. So we've been talking a lot about our headcanons or like subtextual asexuals. It's a good word. But now let's talk about something where there's actually legitimate canon examples, because they are super rare, but it's really awesome when it happens. So Sam, do you want to talk about?
Sure. And yeah, because there are so few actual ace characters, explicitly ace characters, we really do have to headcanon a bunch of the others, like the Doctor and Sherlock. Those are headcanons because, I mean, we want people to relate to, and there aren't enough people who are explicitly asexual for us to relate to. In the popular TV series Game of Thrones, which I actually don't watch, and like one of the few people who doesn't watch it, Varys? It's spelled V-A-R-Y-S on the screen right in front of me. So he's apparently asexual.
So in the TV show Game of Thrones, which is based on A Song of Ice and Fire, the character Varys, who is the master of spies in the capital of the country, is explicitly depicted as asexual, like as explicit as you can get in a fantasy setting. So this isn't too much of a spoiler. So for one of the characters who is depicted as very sexually liberal, and he has a wife and an open marriage, and he's openly like bi or pansexual, he's talking to Varys. And he's asking him about what, like, who he was attracted to when he was younger, because Varys is a eunuch. He was asking Varys if he was into boys when he was younger, and Varys is like, no. And he's like, oh, girls, I never would have thought. And then I can't remember. Should we just play the quote? We should just play the quote. So what do we consider officially canon in asexuality? I would say if they use the term, obviously, asexual, and not just in like a, oh, I'm like pretty asexual because I don't really like care a lot about this kind of stuff and I just broke up with my boyfriend and like whatever. As if like if it's used as a label and not just as sort of like a descriptor, which is often misused, if it's used as a label, like I'm asexual, so if they say the word asexual as an identity and a label, or if it's in some kind of setting where the use of that label would be inappropriate or like wouldn't really fit in with the world building, like a fantasy world or something in the past or something like that, I think they have to sort of explicitly say something about like an absence of desire or not being attracted to either men or women, or just they've never felt like that ever before. And that's not resolved by them suddenly meeting a person in the end, which seems to happen a lot. I've gotten my hopes up several times by characters like, oh, I've never felt that. In terms of TV shows, I think there was also a show called Sirens, which had an ace character, and which is a show about paramedics. It's a medical show, and they did explicitly talk about asexuality. I think there were some issues with it, so I think it sort of gets a rating. But it was cool to have a slightly mainstream TV show talking about it. As well, there's a New Zealand soap opera, but I haven't actually watched any of these because it's very hard to find everything. So Sam and I are giant nerds and we read mostly a lot of books. So there's a lot of young adult books which have, not a lot. There are some young adult books which have asexual characters. Sam, you read Afterworlds. Do you want to talk about that one?
Sure. So Afterworlds is a book by Scott Westerfeld, and it's kind of two books in one because the, I guess I'll call it story A, is about a girl named Darcy who is writing a young adult novel, and it's about her adventures in the publishing world and moving to New York and having all sorts of problems getting published and writing and all sorts of things. And then book B, which is every alternating chapter, is the story that she's actually writing. And yeah, disclosure here, it's never explicitly stated with the word asexual, even though it is a modern setting where it technically could be stated she's asexual. But at one point in the book, pretty early, so I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, she meets someone and her friends later on, she becomes romantically involved with this person. And later on, some of her friends come up to visit her who've known her for a while, and they say, oh, wow, you're in a romantic relationship. Okay. Did you know that you would be? And is it too much of a spoiler to say she's into girls? Nah.
Just say it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So they say, oh, did you know that you were attracted to girls? And Darcy says, I never really thought about it. I guess I'm this character's name, sexual, as if she made up a term, like not homosexual, not heterosexual, but Imogen sexual. Spoiler, she gets together with Imogen, I'm sorry. And so that's not explicit, but it's basically, you can tell that that's demisexual. She became closely emotionally involved with Imogen, and that's when she became sexually attracted to her. Someone says to her, so do you only like girls now? So-and-so asked. I don't know. That answer bores me. You must look at people now and then, like random hotties on the street. Are they ever boys? And she says, I don't look at anyone else. I don't think about it that way. Maybe I'm Imogen sexual. So she's trying to figure out her sexuality without having a clear term for it, but she pretty much hit the nail on the head with the demisexual there, because she's saying she doesn't really look at anybody. She's not really interested in people except for this one person she's formed a close emotional bond with. So that's pretty cool. And then the next line from her younger sister is, I believe the technical term is adorkable, which is kind of sweet, but it's just because the two characters are so adorkable together doesn't necessarily mean all Ace characters are adorkable, but I do like adorkable characters. That's just me, though. And then after the book was published, someone went on Twitter and asked Scott Westerfeld, the author, if Darcy was demisexual. And he basically said, yes, she is. So it's canon from the author, but not quite super explicit canon within the book. But it's, you know, it's still good. And it's representation. And even though it's like, it's also pretty cool that it's in the gray zone of asexuality. It's not like completely asexual on the A end of the spectrum. It's demi in between, which I think is even rarer than asexuality in media. So that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty rare for an author to explicitly say that their character is a minority, like an unusual sexuality, like something that not a lot of people have heard of. Like demisexuality is like even less well known than asexuality. So points for that. It's not quite a Dumbledore because there is a lot of subtext in the books, and the fact that she said that she was not attracted, the fact that she said that she didn't know whether she was attracted to guys or girls, and she'd never felt like attracted to anyone before she met her girlfriend, it's pretty demisexual. So I would like to, before we get into the good books, before we get into my favorite books that have canon ace characters, I would like to talk about a new trend which I've noticed happening. So far it's only a trend of two, but I read them very close to each other, and it was interesting to me. So there's books, Demonosity and Guardian of the Dead, both have explicitly asexual characters. One of them, they're both fantasy books, and both of them have a straight female lead character. And their best friend in both of them is a very hot asexual guy. And this is really interesting to me because they were very much supporting characters, and they had maybe some tiny subplots of their own, but mostly no major relationships with anyone else and no major drama. They're mostly supporting characters. And I think this is really interesting to me because it seemed to replace the gay best friend. Like, they seem to be fulfilling the same function as traditionally the gay best friend would be, where they don't have any drama of their own. They're just supporting the main character. And I think asexual characters seem to be specifically useful in this case because they don't have other relationships. They're not going to get a boyfriend and leave them, according to these books, because they, a problem with these ones is that they seem to tie being aromantic and asexuality together as if they're always the same thing and always together. They just assume that someone who is asexual would be aromantic as well, which is not true, obviously. So yeah, these books are decent. They could, in terms of asexual, it's awesome that they have explicit labels in terms of representation for a character to really fall in love with. They're nothing I would be like crazy excited about, but it is cool that they're in there. So another book I read, which has an asexual character, which I actually really enjoyed, was Quicksilver. It's a sequel to the book Ultraviolet by R.J. Anderson. They're both science fiction books, a little bit science fantasy-y. And the main character in Quicksilver is asexual. And it's talked about in an explicit way. She says the label, and she explains to her friend about what it means. I think it's a little bit clunky because they do have to kind of do an asexual 101 so you understand what's happening. But she also has a little bit more of a nuanced view of asexuality than some of the other books I've read. There was one section where I think she said she told her friend that he looked good. And he's like, oh, I thought you were asexual. And she's like, well, I'm not blind. Like, I can still tell if people are attractive, which is fun. because that's something a lot of people are confused about. So it's really good. And I like the character, and it was an interesting story. And her asexuality was woven into it. Still a little bit awkward, but fun. And I said that's a book I would genuinely recommend to other people and not just read it to have one asexual character in it. So yeah, I would recommend it. She is an alien, but they do... the author was really good about explicitly saying that it was not connected to the fact that she wasn't completely human.
I only read Ultraviolet, the first book, and... I liked it up until the part where a certain thing happened, and then I got sad and upset. Not sad. I got frustrated by the thing that happened, but it was a good book otherwise, I guess. But should I read Quicksilver? Will I like it?
Oh, when it went from being like sort of a more normal book to more science fiction-y?
Yes.
Okay, the other book does deal a lot with the science fiction aspect of it. So if you weren't a big fan of that, then... you might not like it as much.
But at least I'll know it's coming. So there's that, I guess. Cool. We've also read a book called Every Heart a Doorway by Seanan McGuire. And this one is not actually young adults, I believe. I thought it was because I'd seen it online and based on context, I thought it was young adult. It's about teenagers. But then I found it in the adult section of the library and or the bookstore where I was getting it. And there is a little bit of, like, gore and mature subject, so I guess that makes sense that it's an adult book. But I guess it depends on how you define it. But this one also had an explicitly asexual main character. It was from her perspective, and it did also have to have that clunky asexual 101, but I thought it was pretty well done, and she, throughout the book, it's actually a novella, so it's kind of short. And I wish there was more because it was so good, but that's beside the point. She's writing a sequel? Yay!
Different characters with Jack and Jill.
Oh, I liked Jack and Jill. Okay. Yeah, so the character goes through and often talks about how frustrating it is that people don't understand and how she's not aromantic. And so, like, that's really good that the author discussed the difference between asexuality and aromanticism and had the character, you know, be asexual but not aromantic. And the character would sometimes talk about how she liked, you know, cuddling and maybe kissing and making out, but the other person always wanted it to go farther than that, and she didn't want that. And so it made her romantic relationships pretty frustrating. But I thought it was a very well done, relatable way to have an asexual character in there. And it was the main character too, and she had major plots that were not related to her asexuality. And I also just really liked the book. It was very good. It was mystery, horror, thriller. And I guess I should describe the main plot, but it was about a kind of a home for kids who had been to other universes through doors that magically appear, and they spent some time there and then they came back and they can't find their door again, and they just really want to go back to their special universe because every door is kind of tailored for the person's personality, and if they can't get back they get really sad and they get sent to this home where everyone else wants to get back to their doorway as well. It's really good.
Seanan McGuire is the author, and she just seems to be generally awesome. She has a lot of indie books, and she's really good with representation and having underrepresented characters in her books. So this book was so good. You guys should all read it. I love fantasy, first of all, and it was like a really creative fantasy world that she built. And the fact that there was an ace main character was amazing. It was so amazing. I thought it was really interesting how she discussed her romantic relationships. I don't know if you want to chime in on this, Sam, but like in some ways it seemed like she was saying that she did feel romantic attraction to other people, but then in other times she said, like, oh, I'm probably the only girl here who's not attracted to this guy romantically. It seemed like she didn't know really how she felt romantically, which is okay. I think it was like a little bit gray in that area, like in my interpretation of the character, like the way she seemed to be kind of going back and forth on that. And I'm not sure whether that was intentional, because like it's perfectly fine for a character to have some gray area in the way they identify. Or I'm not sure if, like, the author didn't know where she was going with this. Do you remember things about this?
I don't really remember that specifically, but, I mean, yeah, maybe the character or the author was leaving it open, but also, like, that's kind of how I feel sometimes. I don't really know where I fall on the gray zone in the spectrum, on the romantic spectrum. So I guess that's relatable too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fair for fictional characters to be confused too, because, like, it's super confusing. In every heart a doorway, Nancy's world that she comes from is an underworld, which is a really cool aesthetic in my opinion. She's a servant to the queen, and she has to stand very, very still and be a human statue, and she lives in the twilight and eats pomegranates for sustenance, and everything is very slow and still and cool. And she mentioned that she thought maybe the reason she was there is that she was ace, and like a lot of the dead and the people in the underworld would also be asexual, but she said that they weren't, and she was, so it was separate from that, which was an interesting discussion.
So I found the quote from the book. I'm just going to read out the dialogue where she first talks about being asexual to another character. Well, it starts out with, I like this line, so I'm going to include it. They had reached the door to their shared room. Nancy reached a decision at the same time. It doesn't matter whether you're taken or not. I don't do that with anyone. The other character asks, you're a celibate? She says, no, celibacy is a choice. I'm asexual. I don't get those feelings. And then she talks about exactly what Brianna just said with the underworld. And then she says, I just don't. I can appreciate how beautiful someone is, and I can be attracted to them romantically, but that's as far as it goes with me. And then here's another cool part. The other character just accepts this. She says, huh, well, okay. And then she goes on and talks about, you know, she asks a question, which is a fair question, and it was a respectful question. And that's all that happens. And, you know, it's totally cool.
You all need to read this book because it's really awesome. If you like fantasy, I would definitely recommend it. And it's super rare to have a book, like if you read a book specifically to find representation, it's super rare for it to actually be an awesome book. So out of the books I've read, I would say Every Heart a Doorway and Quicksilver were my favorites. And yeah, if you're looking for any other media, there's a whole bunch of lists online. There's a lot of really awesome webcomics online which have explicitly asexual characters, and there is some graphic novels and comics as well, like at TCAF, which is the Toronto Comic Festival. We bumped into an artist who was gray asexual, and he has a whole fantasy world where he has characters which are also aliens. They're sort of slightly based on bees, but space bees, but there's humanoid as well, and they have whole sections of their society who are asexual, and that's part of the character's identity, and it's really cool. I've read a small part of that story set in that world, and it was really interesting. I haven't read his full series. Dylan Edwards, Valley of the Silk Sky, he was really nice. You should check him out. Speaking of comics, something happened recently which was pretty awesome. In Archie, you know, those comics that are everywhere and you get like in grocery stores, the character Jughead is mentioned as asexual, which is amazing and totally surprising for me because I always thought of Archie as like a very kind of mainstream and old comic. Like, it's been around for ages. So I never thought of it as something that would push boundaries and actually do something that's pretty unusual and outside the mainstream and really progressive.
Yeah, and it was handled really casually too. I think it was in issue 4 of the Jughead comic, which is the only one I bought of the entire like Archie universe, just because I wanted the one with the explicitly asexual mention. And it was the two characters walking down the hall and his friend said to him something about you're asexual, and it just went on from there. They just kept talking about things, and that was fine. Like, they didn't make a big deal out of it, and it was totally cool.
Yeah, I think it was like someone was complaining about not being able to find a date or a person in the school, and there wasn't enough people, something like that. And he was like, oh, you wouldn't understand, you're asexual, which is it's a fun way of doing things. I think it's a possibility for introducing characters. Like, make your audience do the research sometimes. Like, if you just use the term, maybe people can Google it. You do run the risk of people understanding it a little bit less. But I think as we move forward and as people get more educated about asexuality and as we get more visibility, I think that will be a possibility. And we can hopefully avoid the clunky 101 thing, which, though necessary right now and useful, is, I mean, it does break up the flow of the book a little bit. Since we're talking about books, I just remembered this, and I was talking about pulling a Dumbledore earlier, which, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, J.K. Rowling stated that Dumbledore was gay, but only after the books came out, and there was basically nothing at all, as far as I can remember, in the books to suggest that Dumbledore was gay. Do you remember anything at all? Like,
I think there was some very light, like, hinting towards his relationship with, was it Grindelwald at the time? But it wasn't explicit or clear that it was romantic.
Which is so frustrating, because that's such a badass story. Like, your, like, best friend and, like, your love turning to the dark side and you having to take him down. Like, that's such a cool story. Why didn't you put it in the book? So that's really frustrating. And J.K. Rowling said, oh, it wasn't in the book because it wasn't relevant to Harry's story. It's like, that's not how it works. If people's sexuality are relevant to more than just who they're sleeping with, it affects, like, their lives as well. But speaking of that, there's another person who also did a similar thing with an asexual character, which I thought was really funny. So Cassandra Clare is the author of the Mortal Instruments series. The first book is City of Bones. And there's a minor character in it who is a vampire, and he's the leader of the vampires, and his name is Raphael. And he's never mentioned as having any kind of relationship or interest in people. After the books were published, like after the trilogy, Cassandra Clare mentioned that this very minor character was asexual, officially, according to her Twitter. Which is fun. I do like that he's asexual, but I also think that's such a cop-out, because there's literally nothing in your book saying that. And also, he's in the TV show, and I do need to look this up, but I'm pretty sure he's not explicitly ace in the TV show. So you had a second chance, and I'm pretty sure you didn't take it and give us an actual canon character, which is very frustrating. But I just thought I'd mention that because they're pretty mainstream books and I thought it was funny.
There's also one other book that I've heard mentioned quite a few times online. I haven't read it. Brianna hasn't read it. But it's called Banner of the Damned by Sherwood Smith. And it's a high fantasy setting, so you can't use the term asexual, or at least it wouldn't make sense in the setting. And one character, Emrys, is asexual. They have another word for asexual, and it's Elor or Elor. And so I guess that's some other representation, because from what I've heard based on reviews, it's a pretty good job of representation. So that's good. It's on my to read list. I just haven't read it yet because I also have 300 other books on my to read list.
Oh, the to read list. It grows exponentially. But there are more ace books, which are possibilities that we can add to it. So we're getting better. We might check in later if we ever keep doing this podcast and give you more recommendations. So,
do you want to talk about trends and stuff like that?
Sure. Go ahead.
One thing I've noticed, and you may have noticed too listening, is that a lot of these ace characters are aliens. Like, there's the Doctor, there's the character in Quicksilver, there are the B characters in the comic we were talking about. And you know, I kind of feel like maybe it's tricky, but it almost feels like they're saying sometimes that asexuality is inhuman, and it's less likely that someone who is fully human would be asexual because sex is such a human thing. It's, and that's an argument that you hear a lot when you, if you come out as ace and people say, oh, but sex is what makes us human. And as much as I love having characters to relate to, I feel like having alien characters just kind of others us a little bit more.
There definitely is that aspect of the other. And I think a lot of characters which are subtextually asexual, like someone who just like, they don't seem to have any kind of interest in that, or the characters who seem to be above basic desires, they always seem to be coded as asexual as much as anything can be coded as asexual. So there definitely is that othering element to it. And I think that is a little bit of a problem. At the same time, though, it is nice to have more diversity in characters. And I think a lot of the time, the way aliens are portrayed in science fiction can get really boring. Like, it's very heteronormative, and they're all humanoid, and they're all like attracted to humans, and they're all straight, and they've like have the exact same like social structures and the exact same orientations and the exact same way of reproducing. So I think like it's cool to have an asexual character. It just would be nice if it wasn't always like the sort of intellectual powerful aliens, or always like the robot types. Like on Star Trek, there's like a lot of sort of very unemotional characters who are asexual. Like as far as I know, Data doesn't have relationships with people, and Spock is part Vulcan, and they only have relationships, like they only get together with people like kind of every 7 years, and other than that it's not really very emotional. Like, they save all their desire for one specific time. So gray sexual, I don't know. So Spock is spends a lot of times like avoiding his emotions, and he's very but he can be either coded as not experiencing sort of human desires, or as repressing it, because he is half human, and that is part of Spock's character, is that he's like struggling to remain logical and unemotional, because that's what's valued in Vulcan society. And he's especially in the beginning of his character development, he's very ashamed of his human half. So I think one of the themes we're seeing is that a lot of the times characters who are unemotional and very stoic are also coded as asexual, or explicitly portrayed as asexual, or characters that are powerful and more other and less human are characterized as ace as well, or non-sexual. Another sort of version of this trope is sort of the intellectual, which can be a cool character. Like, I do love Sherlock, and I love all these types of people, but I think there is sort of a false dichotomy which is created, where a lot of times men are above like basic human emotions, and there's a sort of logic versus our baser desires, and like reason over emotions. And especially I think in, even though I really do like that episode, like from a plot perspective, it was kind of problematic in the BBC Sherlock, where he's working against Irene Adler, because he was portrayed as very sort of celibate. Like, he's very sort of logical and unemotional, and Irene Adler was portrayed as very sexual, and she kept trying to seduce him to the dark side or something, and she kept playing with him. And I think there were some moments where like it was like, oh, Sherlock falling for this, but no, his logic prevailed, and he was not seduced by this woman. And he used the moment when he was holding her wrist to take her pulse to see if she was lying, which is fun, but like in a larger social construct, it does seem to be like man, logic, woman, emotion, you know, which is frustrating. And I think is a little bit of a problem, because some people, I know, like if you say you're asexual, they're like, we've been shamed about sexuality as a society. So a lot of people feel like, oh, are you saying you're better than me? Like, that you don't want this thing? It's like if someone says they don't like chocolate or something, and like, or people are trying to get people to eat dessert. It's like, oh, so, you know, this is making me feel bad about wanting this thing if you say you don't want this thing, you know, and you're probably just secretly really want it, but you're denying yourself, kind of thing.
Like, I think part of the reason we don't have too many ace characters in the media, I mean, for one thing, obviously, it's not very well known yet. It's still kind of a thing society is learning about. But also, even once you do know about it, and like, I know about it, for example, but even I still struggle trying to write and create canon ace characters in things, because first of all, you introduce the character as asexual, and if you explicitly state asexual, you still have to give kind of an ace 101, that clunky ace 101 we were talking about, because again, it's not very well known. And if you don't do that, you have to make it strongly implicit. Otherwise, you have to kind of hint that they're asexual. And if you're talking about, say, a gay man, you can say something like his boyfriend, and then that's implied that he's gay or bi or pan. But you can't say, like, there's no term like that, no catchphrase or little shortcut that you can use to explain that a character is ace. You have to really have them say it. Like, I can't really think of many other ways to have an ace character without just saying that they're asexual. And that's a real life problem too. Like, you can't just say, oh, my girlfriend, if you're a woman, for example, and then people just say, oh, that means she's dating a girl, which means she must be a lesbian or bi or pan. Okay, that's fine, moving on. But instead, I have to say I'm asexual, and then everyone starts asking questions, and that's a whole other can of worms. But yeah, there are tips online I've seen for writing ace characters, but it's not a super easy thing to do.
Yeah, I think you either have to explicitly say they're asexual, or you have to explicitly say in very specific details, no, I am not attracted to any genders in like whatever fantasy, sci-fi, whatever your world, whatever way you can say that in your world that makes sense. And I think that's a little bit tricky to fit in there naturally. And you can't just use the label asexual and say, oh, this character is asexual. But you do run the risk of your audience not understanding. And I think if you try to imply it, like if you just sort of hint at it, most people are never going to get it, because most people aren't very familiar with asexuality, and they always just assume that it's the thing that they're most familiar with. And I know even people who have tried to write gay relationships, people are just like, wow, these characters are really close friends. And it's like, no. So I think like that's something that most people are familiar with. So like the fact that someone who is just like a person who's not super familiar with social justice and different queer identities and different alternative sexualities, they would never assume that a character was asexual unless it was like explicitly stated.
And then we have the whole debate of, is it better to have negative representation or no representation? Although actually maybe we should start by talking about negative representation. Okay. So sometimes we do have asexual characters explicitly, but the representation is not good of the character. For example, there's an episode of House, the medical drama, where so Dr. House finds out that someone in the hospital has a female patient who identifies as asexual and is married to an asexual man, and he bets $100 that he can find a medical reason why she doesn't want to have sex. And so he does all his House things, he runs unethical tests and so on, and he eventually finds out, oh, he's got a tumor that's killing his sex drive, and the wife is just pretending to be asexual to make her husband happy. And here's the kicker, he calls the wife a giant pool of algae, because of course asexual means you reproduce asexually like algae, which is not true. But sometimes I wish when people say that I could just split into two versions and have the other version of myself go far away and then only be conscious in the faraway version and not have to listen to that person anymore. So that's kind of a harmful representation, because then someone who watches that episode, which is a very popular show, and like here's one of their friends or coworkers coming out as asexual, they'll say, oh, I saw that on House. Don't worry, you might just have a tumor. You can still have sex, don't worry. And that's no, like, we're asexual. It's a thing. It's not an illness or a problem. It's our orientation. Thank you. Goodbye. So, yeah, it's annoying.
I can't believe they had a plant joke in there. I've never heard that in real life. Have you?
No.
Okay. Like, because I thought it was just made up. I thought people, like, I don't know. I don't know anyone who would actually say that out loud. So that's irritating. And I think the writers of this show, I think people give them a hard time for that. And they're like, I don't understand the issue. We did give a definition of asexuality in the beginning. And this is just House. House is being a jerk. But the thing is, like, House is, like, regarded as being the expert. Like, he is the Sherlock Holmes of medicine, hence the name House. So the fact that this supposedly genius doctor proved that these two people were lying about being asexual on this super well-known TV show is really harmful, because a lot of people take that show pretty seriously. It is better research than a lot of other medical dramas, so a lot of people, I think, assume that everything on it is accurate, when that's not true. It's just television, and I think it was pretty irresponsible of them to make that episode, because I think it is actively harmful.
And you could also argue that the Big Bang Theory is kind of harmful, because whenever they talk about Sheldon and imply that he's asexual, for example, I think one character asks, so what's his thing, like guys or girls? And another character says, we just assumed he doesn't have a thing, which is pretty implicitly asexual. And what happens as soon as the character says that is the laugh track goes on, as that's like, it's implying that the fact that he's not attracted to men or to women, which are the only two genders they touch on in the show, is a joke, and implies that asexuality is a joke, and it's not. And I don't like that.
And I think the thing with characters like Sheldon is that they have them not being interested in sexual or romantic relationships, and then there seems to be just a view that this is like an unacceptable way for a character to be in, like, a, especially in like a long-term show. So they always seem to end up in relationships, like the creators find a way to maneuver them into having like a quote-unquote normal relationship. So Sheldon dates a woman, and it's weird, it's awkward, and I don't think the relationship makes a lot of sense, like, from what I've heard. I'm not a huge follower of the Big Bang, I'm not caught up, so I don't know exactly what's happening with that, but it is frustrating, and I know a lot of people have viewed Sheldon as asexual. So the question is negative representation better than no representation? And I would say my personal answer to that is it depends on the level of representation. I would say mildly bad representation, like representation that isn't as nuanced or is slightly problematic, is better than no representation. Like the fact that a lot of characters assume all asexual people are aromantic as well. That's annoying. That's probably something that causes someone to have to explain something a bit more in real life if someone's getting their information from that, but overall I think does give more representation and helps spread visibility. On the other hand, things like House, when it's like, this is a disease that can be cured and these two people who said this are lying, that hurts people, because that is a problem for anyone who comes out as asexual, as people assume there's something medically wrong with you or that you're lying.
Yeah, like, if it's poorly researched, at least you're trying. And, I mean, obviously, everyone's going to have different opinions. Everyone who's ace isn't going to like the exact same portrayals or be comfortable with the same portrayals as another ace person. But I think that we should continue striving for asexual representation. And hopefully very soon we start getting it right more than we get it wrong, we as a society. So, yeah, let's keep working on that. Let's go, guys. I guess another thing that would be cool to see is other kinds of relationships in media. So whether or not the characters are asexual, it would be great to see important story arcs happening that are not romantic. Like, I think movies like, minor spoilers here, Frozen and what was the other one? Maleficent. Those ones are getting better at kind of subverting the idea that romantic love is the most important kind of love, and it would be good to see more of that happening.
I think, I was talking with some people about how we feel about asexual representation and how important it is to us. And while I do like seeing it around and I feel a little bit more validated by the fact that there are asexual characters, I can't say that I've ever really, really connected or related with any of the characters, like, very strongly, because I've only, like, have, like, five to choose from, partly. So I think we just need a lot more stories, and I think a lot of different types of stories, and I think having asexual creators make things would help as well, because I think some of the stories, which are awesome, and I encourage anyone who's ace to totally add ace characters to your story, but I think it is hard for some other people to have maybe a more nuanced understanding of asexuality and have some stuff which are a little bit more personal and a little bit more detailed than just, oh, I am not attracted to people. I think a lot of asexual people and their relationships is just portrayed as an absence of something, whereas I think in real life, that absence is filled by other things. You know, like, maybe it's like whatever you're passionate about, like creatively or your work or whatever. But also, I think asexual people seek out a lot of different types of relationships that maybe just straight cis people who are in traditional relationships don't have. I think I would love to see queer platonic relationships. That would be amazing, and I think that would be something I would be really excited about, because I don't really always want a character to be asexual, because I like hearing about relationships, and even though I'm super arrow, I do like reading well-written romantic subplots, and I like characters connecting and having a lot of feelings about each other and the growth of relationships, and that's really interesting. But I think what something you can do is have that, but have it in a non-romantic way or a non-sexual way, which would be amazing. Like, I think I want more story arcs about friendship relationships or family or queer platonic or, I don't know, like student mentor, like anything. Like, there are so many more possibilities which aren't explored.
Agreed. Yeah, so as you can see, there is a limited amount of ace representation in the media. Some of it good, some of it not so good. Again, just gonna say, please read Every Heart a Doorway, because it is very good. Seanan McGuire, it's excellent. And even if a character isn't explicitly ace, it's fun to imagine that they're ace and just headcanon, as people do in fandom. Just imagine that they are ace. And you can also look at it in fan fiction. There are more asexual characters in fan fiction sometimes. You just headcanon them as ace and write it like that.
Yeah, the amount of ace representation in fiction is definitely getting better. And I look forward to the future when I think it will definitely improve. And if you're a creator, get out there and make more. That's amazing. And just keep looking. There is stuff out there. And until there is more stuff, there's always fan fiction. Thank you for listening.
If you're looking for more information about anything we talked about today or about our local ACE community, check out our website at acetoronto.wordpress.com. That's acetoronto.wordpress.com.